Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
Welcome back to the Connect You podcast, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Jack Craven. He is a successful business owner, a property developer, a husband, and a loving father. Jack is also the host of the This Dad Means Business podcast. They share their experiences in business and in parenthood. Jack, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
So, Jack, what I'd like to do with most of my guests is strip it right back and take you back to your early years. So, would you care to sort of talk to me about your childhood and
No problem. I had a really good upbringing and really good childhood. My parents did absolutely everything that they could for us. So they moved out of their hometown because it wasn't the nicest of areas. So when they had me and my brother, I think when I came along, it was like the kickstart that they wanted to move out and move into a better area. So we was in Birmingham at the time. And then they moved us into a place called Aldridge, which was a much better area. But the vibe I got, like when I look back now, was very much their lives were dedicated to me and my brother. So I was very lucky. My mum, she was young when she had me and my brother. So she was 17 or 18 when she had my brother, only 20 or 21 when she had me. So to have two kids at that age, is I couldn't even imagine it. I had my first and I was 24, and even I thought I was young then. But yeah, she did everything for us. My dad worked all the hours under the sun. In factories, not nice conditions, and just kind of drummed into me and my brother from an early age to, if you want to make something, you want to make a decent amount of money and a nice life, like work for yourself. Otherwise, you just, he's always earned money for other people, my dad. He's a very clever man. He's good with his hands. He's very handy, but it's always been for others. So they always thrive off his skill set. I don't know why he never took the plunge. I don't know if I look at that now and think, oh, God, well, he's kind of always made a beeline of like, do it for yourself. Don't do it for anybody else. That is a very good upbringing. Like I say, very nice grandparents, nice little unit. So no issues really.
What about your school years? How did you get on at school?
School years. I was just sports kid. I was just sports mad. So as long as I had a football at my feet or I was in the athletics tournaments or anything like that, I was happy. Primary school. Primary school, I wasn't the most academic of people. Like, I was constantly being told to stand up against the pillar, which was the place you had to go if you weren't listening. I can't even think of the reasons. I'm running through the library. I just ran everywhere. I was just one of those kids, like, backpack on and just, boom, gone. primary school, it was good. Again, no issues. I was football captain, so everybody wanted to be my friend.
Who'd you support?
What's that?
Who'd you support?
I support Birmingham City, which I've not watched them. I used to have season tickets and everything. Again, something that my dad did for me every Christmas. He would get me like the half season ticket. So it was like a gift I always knew I was going to get. And then me and him would go every other Saturday for the remainder of the season. But when we started getting relegated and the prices of season tickets were going up, we thought, man, my dad just liked to go to watch like Cristiano Ronaldo and all the good players. And then we were going and watching like John Smith, who drinks in the pub on a Saturday. So we kind of packed it in. And I'm not, to be honest, I don't follow football. I play football. I really enjoy it, but I'm not a fan of watching it anymore.
No, especially not now with, obviously, you can't anymore. I suppose that then led you on to your academy.
Yeah.
Your business.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so went through secondary school, just kind of coasted through secondary school, finished with 13 GCSEs. I mean, I got a 1A, the rest were B's and C's. So I did well. My parents were very happy. Went on to college, and that was where everything kind of started clicking into place for me then. So I did a sports course at college. So I finished playing football. I had like a couple of injuries. I was never going to make it. It was just a passion. Finished playing and thought, oh, well, I'll try and teach some people instead. Yeah. Teach them how not to play. what I didn't do. So yeah, went to college and I just found college so easy, and everyone around me, I don't know what it was, I can't, still now to this day, I don't know why it was, but I just found it so simple. And the fact that you could basically go off and do a bit of coursework and then hand it in, and the lecturer would basically say, if you just do this, this and this, you'll get a distinction. So I was like, all right, well, I'll just do that right now for you.
It's more of a relaxed environment at college, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's where I started to kind of realise my mindset at that age. Not that I knew it then, but when I look back now, I realised that I had quite a persistent mindset, shall we say, because, like I say, my pals would be like, oh, we've got a merit, which is like the middle grade. Right. I'm happy with that. I'm done. Like, oh, I can sign it off now. I'm finished. Let's go to the park or whatever it was. Pubs at that age, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas I was like, well, I'm just going to quickly shoot into the library. Like, literally, it'll take me 20 minutes to do what he wants me to do, and I've got a distinction. He's told me I'll get a distinction if I do it. So I did that, and I didn't drop a grade. Like, I got, I think it was like 140 points a year you could get. So I finished with 280 points over the 2 years. Didn't drop a point. And my lecturer was like, we've never had that in this course. Like, we want to offer you this award. And we went to this really nice award ceremony. Took my mum with me. The news was there. It was really good. But yeah, although it was a really good achievement, I felt like anybody could have done it. I didn't look at it and think like, oh, I've really pushed myself to get that. It just kind of happened. And I thought, I don't know.
You seem like you're downplaying quite a lot. You've got 13 G's this season. Oh, I only got 1 A.
Yeah.
It was in the news. You downplayed that. I mean, explain that. I mean, not a lot of people get to go on the news.
Yeah, no, it was just...
You're downplaying quite a lot of this.
Yeah, I think so. But I think, because when I look back...
280 points, that's quite a lot.
It is, yeah, it is. And like you say, when I do talk to others and they go, no, why did you do that? I can't give people an answer on how... I just found it easy. And that's not me being like, oh, my brain is superior to everybody else. That's just kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, it was just basically you'd hand it in, like, and they'd go, oh, just do that, and then you'll get the better grade. So it's, in my head, I was like, oh, I'll just do that then. But I think a lot of my friends at that age, their mindset was very much like, oh, we've done it. We've got a merit. I'm happy with that.
Did that go back to your childhood? Did you have to feel that you had to make... anyone proud in particular? Did you have to...
I think I always wanted to make my dad proud, particularly with football. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, he was, to be fair, both my parents, every single Sunday, like, I started playing football properly when I think I was like 10, finished playing when I was about 17, and every Sunday, and then when it flicked onto Saturdays, they were there, come rain or shine, they were both there. My mum became like the first aider for the team. One year when we was about to fold, my dad didn't want me to stop playing, so he was like, he's got no kind of experience, he's like, oh, well, I'll manage the team and we'll just keep going, which added loads more pressure then, because like, he didn't want to look like he was favouring me.
Yeah.
So if anything, like at the half time in like the changing rooms, I was the one that got it in the net, because he just had to channel his anger, and it was kind of like easier to take it out on his own son than it was on anybody else. But I'd say I thrived off it. At the time, I was a bit like, oh my God, just get off my back a bit. But now, when I look back again, I think, well, it was good, because my dad always used to say, it doesn't matter whether you're training, doesn't matter whether you're playing, doesn't matter whether you're in the park, give it 110%. You don't know who's watching. Like, you don't know who is just walking past. Because obviously, at the time, I was like, I want to be a footballer. I want to do this, I want to do that. And my dad was a very good footballer when he was younger, and he didn't make it, because he just started prattling around at like 16, 17. So I think he was like, you need to just work harder than what I did. And I worked bloody hard, and you need to work even harder if you want to make it. So yeah, he just kind of drummed in from that age. No matter what you're doing, doesn't matter whether you think you're doing it and being monitored, or if you're doing it in your own time, just give it your absolute maximum, because you don't know what's going to come at the end of it. So that's kind of stuck with me for quite a while now, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I suppose you teach your kids that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I always try and get, like you say, my kids... For me, my philosophy with my kids is just enjoy what you're doing. And if you're enjoying it and you are really enjoying it, like, you will give it your best anyway. Don't force anything that you don't want to do, really. Like, if you're not keen, so like with my eldest now, I've got Mila, who's 4, she'll be 5 in May, and Penny, who's 2, she'll be 3 in May. And like with Mila now, it's very much, well, before COVID, I'd pretty much put her in every class I could. Unfortunately, my wife's got the same thinking. It's like, well, we'll take her to ballet, we'll take her to football, we'll take her to karate, we'll take her to swimming. And she can kind of say that she enjoyed that one, she didn't like that one. And she said it now, it's kind of worked well with COVID, because they all cancelled. She's now coming to me and saying, oh, when can I go back to football? When can I go back to swimming? And now I'm starting to learn about her a lot more and see what she actually really starts thinking about. I mean, we try and get her to do all sorts of this. I mean, like, I don't know where it's come from, but she's got a serious passion for cleaning. I don't know. I don't know where that... I'm a bit of a clean freak, but I mean, apart from telling her to clean up her toys and just the standard kid stuff, I mean, like, I fell through the ceiling the day. I'm renovating my house at the minute. And I fell through the ceiling. I was doing a job upstairs and I fell through and both my legs went through. And rather than checking on me, her first instinct was like, I'll go and get the mop, I'll go and get the bucket, and I'll go and get the dustpan, I'll clean it up for you, don't worry. And I was like,
that, is that your wife going, oh, he's created more mess?
I would like to say yeah, but no. I mean, I'm very fortunate, like I say, my wife, some of the stuff I've put her through in the last 4 years when we started kind of, no, what are we in now, 2021, 6 years when we started renovating houses, we lived in them because I just thought it's kind of like, it just seemed the safe route to me. Like, we'll just go down this route. We kind of fell into it, which I'm sure we'll get onto later on. But yeah, I'm fortunate with her. She's great. Luckily, I'm the clean freak. She's clean, but I'm like the OCD one. I have to have everything in order.
It leads me quite nicely onto you and your wife. Tell me a little bit about your wife. How did you meet?
So we went to the same school. She's the year above me, so technically I'm punching above my weight. But yeah, we went to school together. We didn't really cross paths. We were very different at school. She was kind of like, she'll hate me for saying this, but she hung around with the bad kids. She was like behind the smoking shelters and all this stuff. And I was very much just on the tennis courts playing football. Like, that was me at school. So we didn't really engage with each other at school. And then when I was 17, passed my driving test, and as you do, like, drifting my car and as the car park, showing off, like, oh, look what I can do, my Clio. And she was there with her circle of friends, and we just, like, both of our circle of friends started chatting. All of my mates were trying to get, my wife's called Jamie, all of my mates were trying to get Jamie to go in their car and go and see them. And I think because I didn't, my thinking with anything is, like, don't put it on display. Like, don't show it. Like, I can shut off very quickly. And if I get it, bonus. If I don't, like, move on to the next one. So although I liked her, it was kind of like, I ain't going to put myself out there because you don't know what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
You're playing it cool.
Yeah, playing it very cool. And then, yeah, we basically was at a house party and she texts me, oh, come sit next to me. And I was like, nah, it's a joke. You're all going to, like, do something if I come and sit next to you or something. So I just ignored the text. And then, yeah, here we are now. Like I say, we got married, went traveling together, we got married, we've had kids, and we've lived a very nice story so far, like what you would like to do for your kids.
Fantastic. That's absolutely amazing. So you've been traveling around the world, you've had your kids.
Yeah, the traveling was a big part, really. It kind of set in stone that Jamie was the one, because it was, we went over to the side of the world, went to Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore, and it was like fresh out of college. Like, we're still very young. My lecturers wanted me to go to uni so bad because of my grades. Like, you need to go uni. You're going to do so well by going there. It just weren't for me. Like, I weren't interested at all. I didn't want to get that debt around my neck. I didn't want to go sit back in more lessons until I was 21 years old, all that stuff. So, yeah, we went traveling. I thought I'd rather get some experience. And Jamie's auntie and uncle run a soccer academy in Malaysia. So we'd spoke to them and they said, yeah, if Jack wants to come and do some work, pick up some experience, then you can live with us. That's absolutely fine. So we based ourselves in Malaysia and then we went off on like weekends and he gave us a week off here and there. We went off to like Thailand, Singapore, Langkawi, just stuff that you see people do and you think, oh, I wish I could do that one day. Like, we drove around the whole of Langkawi on a scooter together in one day, like this little island, picked up a little map and we just scooted around the whole day. And it's just stuff like that. And, yeah, it kind of just me and her there, and it set us together solid.
That's fantastic. I mean, how did your family feel about that? You sort of setting off and...
They were right, to be fair. They were okay. My family gave Jamie a tricky welcoming, shall we say. So, yeah, I think what it was...
I know some people out there, this might touch a nerve. I mean, I apologise if it does to anyone. But there might be some people out there going, well, I want to... sort of fully commit to my partner. But you've done that. You said, no, I don't really want to do the football, but I'm going to take the leap. I'm going to go traveling with my partner, my wife. You fully
committed. Yeah, yeah.
Which is fantastic. And you've done it. You went all the way to Malaysia. And yeah, I mean, how did that affect you, your relationship? Did it affect you?
Yeah, it made it stronger, if anything. She had some mental health issues while she was out there. And because it was only me out there, I felt this overwhelming urge of protection. And like, I'll never forget, like, she passed out one time, was in a shopping mall out there. And I don't know if it was anxiety or like homesick. I'm not sure what it was. I mean, again, we were young. I'm sure she won't mind me telling the story. But yeah, she'd passed out and was like by the elevators. And people already paid a lot of attention to us, especially my wife, because she's a blonde white woman. And over there, that's like the holy grail. Like they have makeup in Malaysia to make themselves more paler. So they was already fascinated by my wife. And yeah, anyway, she was ill one day and we was out in the shopping centre, and I remember like fending people off, like arguing with all these Malays to like go away, because we're all just staring at her. And I thought the last thing she wants, if she's feeling really ill, is all these eyes on her. And that moment has stuck with me forever, because it just overcome my, and I was just like, just this other thing come over. And I was quite a young, well, I was young, but I was quite a, I wasn't outspoken. I've never had a fight. Like I wasn't that kind of guy at school. I wouldn't argue. I'd just be at the back of the crowd and just kind of listen until something ticked in my head. But yeah, that day, just like this overpowering, I don't know, what was sensation? I was just like fending people off. I was like, go away. Da, da, da. And ever since that moment, yeah, I've never looked back. I've never thought like, oh, is there something, are we pushing it a bit too soon? Like literally from that moment, Ben, I was like 18 at this point. I was like, boom. I was like, we get on so well. There's obviously something there, because I've got this urge to just defend you and look after you. Do you know what I mean? Like it's hard to explain.
From that moment on, you knew, it sort of solidified your position as what you are now, husband and wife. You just knew she was the one. You felt that protective nature, if you like. But you say, you mentioned earlier that you was kind of met with a bit of resistance from your family. I mean, what was the reason for that?
So the main reason for that was my brother's girlfriend at the time. So she lived in our house, and she knew Jamie before any of my family did. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if she was just a bit jealous that this other woman was going to come into our family. But yeah, she started just spinning tales about Jamie to my family, telling them just all this stuff that wasn't true. And obviously because my family knew my brother's girlfriend better, they obviously took that side. It's just a natural reaction. So when Jamie started coming over, my dad would just, it's funny now when we look back, and my wife finds it hilarious, and we get on so well now. Like me, my wife, mum and dad, we're like best pals. We go out for meals together. I mean, they both work for us. So my dad's at our house quite a lot. Like he's a maintenance guy for us and he helps us with the properties. And then my mom is like our admin manager. So she's in the office every day with us. So we're together a hell of a lot. But yeah, back then, my dad just point blank wouldn't say hello, like just ignore her. My mom, she's too nice to be mean, my mom. So she would say hello, but yeah, you could tell she was thinking something in her head. But like, say, so luckily, Jay was just like, well, she's got the attitude very much of, I like you, son. I couldn't care less what you think about me. Like, deal with it, basically. What you're being told isn't true. You can either believe it or you can't believe it. I'm not bothered. And that's her attitude since day one. She gets that from her dad. Her dad's the same.
I think she's got to come on a podcast as well.
she's very black and white. She's just, look, this is it. You either like it or you don't. I couldn't really care less. I think she's rubbed off on me in a good way, and I've rubbed off on her in a good way. I've probably mellowed her a little bit and brought her back down to earth a little bit, so she's not so feisty. And she's probably put a bit of fire in me as well and made me like give it a bit more, especially as we've grown older together. Like I say, now I do some things nowadays that I would never have done even last year. Like just putting myself out there, like the podcast that I've recently set up, I couldn't imagine myself last year ever thinking that I would contact somebody and then interview them about how they like being a dad and how they run businesses. And it probably has all stemmed from her just over the years, giving me more and more. So as she's come down, I've come up, and now we're kind of like slap bang in the middle now with each other.
That's fantastic. So she's propelled you. And let's talk about your academy.
Yeah, so we, it kind of come, I always knew I wanted to do, since we went to Malaysia, I knew I wanted to do football coaching. So we come back and she was working at the time. She was, she's a sign language interpreter is what she was initially. So she worked in like how, like social housing with deaf people in there, they had learning difficulties, those are the kind of things. So she would go in and she'd take them into the local town and help them do the banking and all that kind of stuff. And then I was, at the time, I was working at the time it was called a Sporter. I think it's David Lloyd's now. But yeah, it was a big gym franchise and I worked in the kids bit in the back. So it was like the creche and the after school club kind of bit. And then I was also Chinese delivery boy as well on the evenings just to get some extra cash in. So yeah, it started there. My boss approached me and said, oh, if you want to rent the hall off us, you can, and you can I hadn't even thought about it. She's like, if you want to rent it, we'll do it at £40 a night and you can just do a club and charge anything from there. So I owe a lot to her as well. I still see her now because she kind of kickstarted it for me. So we set it up, did the football coaching, did it for about a year. And I kind of realised that if I wanted to grow bigger, I needed to broaden my sports because football, I don't know if it was dying off, but yeah, or if it was just my marketing was poor, it probably was that. I just struggled to get more than kind of 15 kids on a class, which was great at the time because I was getting like £3 a kid. And you think, oh, for 45-minute football class, that's decent at my age back then. But I thought if I want to start obviously moving on and leave the other jobs. So anyway, when a sport shut down, it turned to Virgin. Virgin didn't offer holiday clubs for the children when the schools were shut. So all of the people that used to use a Sporter during the holiday clubs had nowhere to go. So again, my boss approached me. She's like, oh, well, you've set up the business. Some of our members already use your football club. Why don't you rent the hall of us in the term time, in the holiday time, and kind of set up a holiday club and just do what we did as a Sporter, but for yourself? So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll give that a go. She gave me a really good rate on the rent. So I did that. And after about another year went past, I'd kind of got the clubs up from, a sport was getting again about 15 a day, and I'd got the clubs up to about 50, 60 kids a day. And I was just going around the local estate, just putting leaflets through. Me and my wife would go, and she started doing some things online for me, started building some websites. And this was quite early, it was like 2011, 2012. Facebook was just coming about then, I think. So she started putting some posts on Facebook. And then, yeah, anyway, Virgin, the big boss at Virgin turned around and was like, oh, we're going to start doing them again ourselves now because you've got such good numbers. I was like, it's a bit harsh. So they were like, you can either leave it and just work for us and we'll just pay you a day rate, or you'll have to leave altogether and go off on your own. So I was like, well, I'll leave altogether. I don't want to work for you after you've done that to me. So I went off, found a little venue local, robbed all the members from David Lloyd's and said, look, they've done this to me. Like, come, I was only young. I would never do this now. I was like, come join me over here. And like, luckily 60% of them did. They liked me. It wasn't the fact that it was at David Lloyd's, which is a big brand. Their kids got on with me. It was me every day. I didn't have no staff at this point. So yeah, they all followed me. And then we just kind of built it from there. So started off with holiday clubs. One of the parents at that holiday club was a head teacher. So she was like, oh, well, will you come into our school and do some PE lessons with the kids? My kids love you, so I'm sure the school kids will love you. So I was like, yeah, for sure. And then I kind of started to get a business idea in my head then. I thought, I can roll with this. I can get some more schools on board, can open up some more holiday clubs. I just need to get a bit of a network of a team. So one day my wife came home from work and had a really bad day. And I was like, leave. I was like, I can afford to pay you what they're paying you. Leave, come and work for me. You can help me grow. I want to open up some more venues. I want to get some more schools. So she did. It was the best thing I ever did. She propelled me like so far forward. My paperwork was awful. Like, I don't even know. When I look back, I think I don't even know how I coped with that. Like, I was taking down people's details, phone numbers. Bearing in mind, it sounds bad now, but yeah, bearing in mind, I was looking after people's kids for the days. I had no kind of systems in place. Their kids were always safe, don't get me wrong. They were always fine, really well looked after, and they had loads of fun. But my thinking was, how can I keep the kids active? How can I keep them energised? Rather than, oh, if there's an incident, what route am I going to go down? So obviously when Jamie came on board, she looked at all of that, and she put all my health and safety, and she put all HR in place. First day, everything was like crisp then. We had a whole signing procedure, and it kind of moved me into the next level then, because everyone looked at me like a completely different business rather than just a one-man band kid that my kids liked and I trust him. It now moved into more of a brand. So when I launched my second venue, it wasn't me, it was JC Academy. And because we had a name then, because of what she was doing in the background, people went to it. So like I say, we just propelled again then, and I started contacting schools. And like I say, you know, we have kind of not shrunk the business. We got to a point in my head, I needed to grow the business. And I just thought, well, I'll keep going, because the more work, the more money. It didn't work that way. We got to a point probably 2 years ago where we had the most work, we had the most staff, the biggest venues, and I had the least amount of money. And I thought, what's going on? And like I say, it was all just piling out on marketing, piling out on equipment. And I wasn't on top of the accounting side of it. That wasn't my background. So yeah, we sat down, we rejigged everything, and like we said, we focused on the work that brought in the most profits rather than just revenue, which is what I was focused on. We kind of reduced it and said, well, that's bringing us in. Let's say it's only bringing us in 100 grand a year, but we're getting like 80 grand of that profit. Whereas this one's bringing in 200 grand a year, but I'm only getting like 5 grand off it because there's so much going on with it. So we chopped those off, and it, to the outside people, they probably thought, oh, we're struggling. And it's harsh, isn't it? A lot of people want to see people go through that phase. A lot of people thrive, especially on social media. Maybe my old school friends and things like that, people that were acquaintances back then, I knew got a buzz off seeing me kind of reduce and move offices into smaller offices and things like that. But the fact of the matter is now, like I say, we're better off there now than we was then. And I know that, my wife knows that. It's just, and we've got less on our shoulders as well.
So that's helped you, isn't it? Obviously learning to say no.
Yeah, definitely. I was in a point, like I said, I was in a point with the business where schools were contacting us. We went to the education show one year at the NEC, and we met with hundreds of head teachers, and I had a really good sales pitch. And I say sales pitch, it was just me chatting to them. And I think that's what shone through. That was the honesty. Yeah. It wasn't like a pre-written out script. It was just me saying, look, me and my wife, we've got a team of coaches. They're all trained by me personally. I come into the schools. You're not dealing with area managers, da, 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 da. And yeah, that kind of expanded us into we're Midlands based. That expanded us into London. And that's probably where things started to go south then. I wasn't ready to go into London. I shouldn't have gone in there, but I did, because I was like, oh my God, schools in London want me. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to do it. But the logistics of it, trying to run a team. We had a team of 10 down there at one point. With no manager, I was managing it, so I was going down like every other week. And yeah, things quickly started to happen down there because I wasn't there every day. Things started to happen, schools weren't being happy, money was going missing, and I thought it's not right. So we chopped off a lot of the work in London, and we've just completely pulled out of London in the last 6 months, mainly because of COVID and things like that, staffing issues. Yeah. It wasn't even like it was London that I could get to quickly, it was Croydon, you know, it was quite far away from it, it's like 4 hours. Yeah. So it was we're out of London now, and although we lost the last school we pulled out of, we had good profit margins on there, but the issues it brought and the school didn't get a true reflection of the service that I like to offer, because it wasn't me. We were just chucking staff in there because I was struggling to find staff, particularly during the last year with COVID. A lot of my old staff didn't want to go in, which I understood. It was rife down there at one point, and I thought, I don't want to get on public transport. I don't want to go and be in with a school of kids. And I couldn't really force them to go in. I'm not that kind of person. So I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll have to just move on and progress with other people. And that's when I started just chucking anybody in. And that's not what we're about. We like to vet them very, very well. I like to train them. I like to go through like 3 or 4 months with me before they even get deployed by themselves. So we had a conversation with the school and I said, look, I think it's maybe best if we leave it where it is. I think they were on the same page. They were probably going to get to the point of saying, this isn't what we're used to with you. Like, something's changed. So we just left it. I mean, I like to leave all of our schools on very good terms. Any schools that have cancelled contracts for whatever reason, mainly funding with schools, I always like to leave it on good terms, because you never know what's going to come back around the corner. If they get budgets increased again, then I like to think their first port of call is, like, let's get Jack back in, because he was ace when he was here.
Yeah. So, and then in regards to the, like, the functionality of your business, is it just yourself, or is it you and your wife together that make the decisions?
Yeah, it's very much now me and my wife that make the decisions. So yeah, she became a 50% shareholder probably about 3 years ago. So up until that point, she was just an admin manager, and now she's 50-50 directors with me. So everything goes through both of us. If anything, now, recent times, she probably has more of a say. I'm not in there so much anymore, because obviously I've set up the property business based off previous experience. We've kind of gone down that route now, which was something we always wanted to do. I had to just get my business to the right point. Very fortunate that the staff we've got at the minute, it's probably what's led me to be able to relax a little bit with it, is a really, really good team. I've got two guys that have now been with me since day one, like 7 years they've been with me. They know it inside out. I trust their decisions. I trust what they do. They'll run everything by me, but 99% of the time, what they're going to go with anyway is what I would suggest them to go with. So yeah, in normal times, non-COVID times, my wife would be in there like 4 days a week. I'd be in there a couple of days a week. And then we've got my mom is now in there 5 days a week. She obviously doesn't let anything, although she's not got a say in anything. She's the admin manager. She just kind of does everyone's accounts, she does the payroll, those kind of stuff. She's got her ear to the ground. If she hears the staff talking about something that doesn't fit with my morals and my values, she would obviously ring me and say, look, I heard such and such saying this today. Is that what's going on? And then I'll be like, oh, okay, I'll pop in now and just have a quick chat.
Okay, so she's briefly touched on your property as well.
Yeah.
Is that solely yourself that you're doing for you at the minute, and then you're going to sort of ease your wife into it, or...?
No, she's full on, man. It all kicked off again in 2014 when we'd kind of just started up the JC Academy business properly, using her wages because I had no accounts at that point. We knew we wanted to move out. We didn't want to rent. I didn't want to give someone else my money and not have anything at the end of it, was our thinking at the time. So we was like, what can we afford? And we had about like 60 grand, which now would get you nothing. You couldn't then, really. So we looked everywhere, and we stumbled upon a repossession. And my dad was like, don't go for a repo. It's too risky. Like, you might lose it. Like, you could lose your money. Like, we'd saved about 6 grand. And again, you look back now and you think, oh, it wasn't a great deal. But to us back then, it was like, oh, my God, I can't lose that kind of money. So we... hello. And my daughter's just come in.
That's fine. Hello.
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 How you doing? You all right?
Yeah, got your new lockable diary, haven't you?
Oh, I think my Billy's got that.
In a minute, darling, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to come down in a minute. Yeah, you can stay there, that's fine. So, yeah, we brought this flat in 2014, a repossession. It was all we could stretch to, and it was stressful. I say it's stressful. I don't get stressed, really. I'm very lucky. My family got stressed. Because it was like, yeah, it had to be like a 28-day turnaround, one of those deals. You had to have everything. No, you didn't get stressed, did you? Yeah, had to be like a 28-day turnaround. So we got it, and it was a really good deal. And like, when I look back now, like, those are the deals I want to find nowadays, and they're nowhere to be found. So we got it. I had no clue about property. I couldn't do anything. It needed painting. It needed new flooring. So my dad came in, my friend came in, and they did everything for me. I was very lucky, and they did it all. And the business was growing in the background at the same time. So we got to a point after about 6 months, and I said to my wife, well, she was girlfriend at the time, I said, we can afford to buy another house and keep this one. Like, we can rent this out. I've got enough cash in the bank to get a deposit on another one. What do you think? So obviously we didn't have a garden. So she was like, yeah, sure, then let's go for it. And in our heads, we thought, if we can get enough profit from this one to cover the mortgage on a new one, then we're kind of like living for free as effect. So that was what we did. We put it up for, we got a good rental for it. We moved in with my in-laws for a month, found a deal. And I thought, right, I want to get another one that needs work. I'd got an idea now, I can put value onto things, which I hadn't before. So we went shopping, we found one. Very fortunate, again, we landed on this one. The woman had sold it. Oh, thanks. This woman had sold a house and it fell through, and she was moving to Wales and everything was booked. So literally went to look at this property, and she said, she was like, oh, I need to sell it. Like, you can have it for 20 grand below value, like, now. And for somebody to say that to us, I was like, oh my God. So yeah, we literally went home that night, showed my dad, because for some reason, still at that age, you just wanted to get your parents' approval on things.
I think you do it at any age, don't you? You want someone's approval because you don't really know, especially if you're new to property, you don't really know if you've not had any education within that.
Yeah.
And like you say, you are dealing in sort of small chunks of money. If you've not got a lot of money, you've not got that buffer there.
No, that's what I mean. We were putting everything we had behind us back in. So it wasn't like we were going to put 50% of our savings in. We were putting, like you say, the full whack in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I drove my dad past it and he pulled a face. I think, again, because the area. So it's in a place called Pelsall, which is a nice area in itself. But the area that we chose, or let's say again, the area that we could afford to go into, or where this kind of deal was that I'd found, was in the rough part of Pelsall. like the council estate as such. But the house was bang on, and I looked online and I was like, but the other ones are going for like 160 grand. And this woman said, I can have it for, it was up for 155, this one. But there and then she was like, you can have it for 20 grand less. So she's offering it me for 135. In the end, I ended up getting it for 125 in the end. So we went and looked at it anyway, went back, spoke to my wife, spoke to my mortgage broker. And she was like, look, you can stretch this. Unless you can find another 10 grand cash, like your mortgages, the lenders are stretching to this. So I went back the next day, I knocked on the woman's door and I said, look, I really like your house. I really want it. The absolute maximum I can go to is 125. And she was like, yeah, okay, you can have it. So I was like, oh, amazing. So yeah, we got this house with the view to just do it and sell. It was the first one we'd ever looked at that way. So we moved in and within about 6 months, we'd done everything, new kitchen, new bathrooms, redecorated throughout, like made a fancy fireplace, like just little quirky things that we knew would help it to sell. And then while we were there, my wife fell pregnant. We got married. Like, we was only there for a year. We did loads while we was there.
rewind.
Yeah.
In that house, you done what?
In that house, my wife got pregnant and got married while we was there.
While she was renovating?
Whilst we were renovating, yeah. So, obviously, she fell pregnant while we was renovating.
You're supposed to be working.
Yeah, I know. I think it was the honeymoon.
Yeah, it's busy.
Yeah, it was honeymoon bathing. So we were then like, oh well, now we don't want to bring a baby up in this area because we realized at this point it wasn't the best of areas. So it was like it kind of pushed us on even faster than like we need to find somewhere else. So we found another one down the road. It still in the best area, but it was better than that one. But again, it was just a good deal. It was a 3-bed detached. I mean, again, at this time, how old, when was this? 2016. So what are we on now? So it's like 5 years ago. I was 24 years old. Yes, yeah, so that would make sense. 23 years old, going into like a 3-bed detached to renovate. I was thinking like, I'm crushing it. Like how am I in a position to be buying houses like this at such a young age? My friends were all still living with the parents and things like that. But it was just through just doing it. Just like, we didn't stop. We worked on the business all day. We got home at like 6 o'clock and we'd start on the house and we'd work on the house until like midnight and we'd go to sleep and we'd go again and again and again. And I want to look back now, it was mental, but it's the only way we got to where we're at now, was just through that pure, non-stop, relentless, like my family used to always say, like, you need to take a break, but I didn't feel like I needed one. I actually felt worse for having a break. Like if I stopped on the weekend or something, I'd be sitting there like twiddling my fingers, looking and thinking, oh, I need to go and do that. I need to do this. So I just wouldn't. I'd go and start straight away.
Did you ever burn out?
No, I think I didn't burn out. The toughest period was when we'd moved into this 3-bed detached. So we made good profit on that one in Pelsall. We'd made about 35 grand profit, which we put straight back into this next one. We put a bigger deposit in. We needed a bigger pot for the renovations because it was a 3-bed detached that needed rewiring, needed new boilers, needed everything back to brick and go again. So it was by far the biggest project that we'd done. Me and my dad did Pelsall together. So I learned a lot from just watching him. I said, look, I want to learn how to do it now. So he's handy. So we did that one together. The next one, which was in a place called Blockswich, I did it all myself. If I got stuck, don't get me wrong, I'd ring him, he'd come over. So that was what we did. So I did it all, new kitchens, new bathrooms. And during that time we was in that house, we lost our biggest contract at work. My daughter had just been born. So she was born in May 2016 and December 2016, we lost our biggest contract at work. It hit us for about 60 grand a year profit. And it was a huge chunk. Wow. And I was kind of like, I remember my wife ringing me because she'd seen the email first. She rang me and she was like, such and such school is cancelling with immediate effect. And I was like, I can't, I've got contracts in place. And they found a loophole. Obviously, it was a basic contract. But yeah, they found a loophole. It was nothing to do with the service we were offering. It was purely for the fact the head teacher left. New head teacher came in. Didn't use outside coaches. They got the teachers to do PE. That was their philosophy. What can you do about it? So, yeah, it was a tough period because we were in the middle of a really, really big renovation. Money was dwindling. We had less and less money coming in. Like, our profits just got cut, like, so much then. So it was a tough period, that was. But again, like I say, with the people around me, my wife was just like, don't worry, we'll find new schools, we'll get new work, we're going to make profit on this house, we'll put cash back in the bank, don't worry about it, we're in a good position. Like, look, she very much would always say to me, like, look at what you've got around you. Like, you've got yourself to where you're at now. You haven't done this by working for anybody else. You've done this by just going out there and doing it yourself. So look what you've got around. We've got like potentially 70 grand sitting in this house. Who else at 23 has got 70 grand cash behind them? Like, it was show-offy at the time, but I had like Range Rovers on the drive. She had a Mercedes, I had a Range Rover. Who else has got that around them? And I think I needed that at the time to just be like, okay, yeah, we can make this work. We can make it happen. So yeah, we just kind of dug our heels into the ground, got the house done quicker so we could pull the money back out of it, got work back on track. So just started selling more and more again. And yeah, like I say, I got ourselves out. It was stressful at the time, but like I say, I'm fortunate. I don't get majorly stressed. I can, as I mentioned earlier, I can shut off from things very, very easily. Not in a way of shutting off and forgetting and burying my head in the sand, in a way of I can shut off and not let it get to me to break me down. I can just switch off and think in my head like, right, okay, this is the route out. If that don't work, this is the next route. If that don't work, this is the next route. If that don't work, shit, we're in trouble.
Just want to sort of ask a question in regards to the monetary value and what that means to you. I get the impression it doesn't mean that much.
What, money coming in?
Yeah, because like your wife, she said, like, who's got a Range Rover? And
yeah,
from the impression I get from yourself, it doesn't really, the money's not important.
I think when the kids came along, it all changed. But as you know, as a dad, like when your partner gets pregnant, like they go through all the first 9 months. And although it's exciting for the dad, you're not really a part of it because you're not feeling the, like, obviously my wife was feeling sick, like, got all the kicks, all the feels going. I went to all the scans and everything, but you can go to work as a dad and your brain gets occupied by something else. Whereas when my wife was at work, she's working at the computer feeling sick. Her mind is constantly thinking about the baby. So she's building up those bonds from day one. And then even the first year, my wife was breastfeeding. She always wanted to breastfeed and I fully supported it. But it in a way made me redundant, which I don't regret, because my kids have got, like, they had, the, in my eyes, a really, really good start. They had a really good bond with the mum and me. But again, she did all the night feeds. The most I could do was get up and go and get Mila and bring her to her just to save her that little bit of walking at nighttime. I wanted to do as much as possible, but there was no bottle feeding, none of that stuff. So again, for the first year, it was kind of like I was still in the same mindset as I was before, which money was everything before. I wanted to have everything. I wanted to have all the money. So for no other reason, I just wanted money. I didn't have nothing in my head of what I wanted it for. I just knew I wanted money. And then obviously as you start to get more of a family unit, it changes. And now it's very much, and like say, probably when we sold that house in 2017 and moved out, my daughter was like just about to turn two. It was very much at that point like, right, I need money now so that they can have everything that they want. Not to spoil them, but I never want them to feel like they can't have something. I want them to work hard. And you know, it was a bit mad really thinking back. She was like 18 months old. I was thinking I wanted to work hard. But you start thinking this stuff. And yeah, it all changed then. It was very much more now. I want to be able to be around all day, every day. I don't want to have to go and sit at a desk at 9 o'clock and I'm not getting in until five. If I want to take a day off, I'm going to take a day off because I want to take them swimming or want to go on Towers or Drayton Manor. I want to be able to do that. So it all changed at that point, up until the point, like you say, last year, was it the year before? Might have been the year before. I got rid of all my nice cars. We've not got bad cars. I've got a nice pickup and I've got a nice Nissan Juke now. But I thought I'm putting so much money into these cars that could be going into something so much more important. So I've never been a fashion envy guy. I mean, like, I'm sitting here now wearing a dad of girls t-shirt, hashtag outnumbered. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, before kids, I wanted Gucci watches. I wanted Gucci trainers. I wanted Ralph Lauren t-shirts. I wanted all the stuff. But now I'm like, not fussed about. I normally now roll around in some Primark jeans and just a black t-shirt because I don't want to be getting up to that day. It could be rolling around the floor with the kids. It could be knocking out a kitchen like what I'm going to go and do today. It could be sitting on a podcast. None of that stuff bothers me anymore. I'm completely more now driven towards, yes, I want the money, but not so that I can just have it to splash on me and my wife. It's so that there's something there for the kids and that I know if we ever need anything or if the business does die, I've got a buffer there that will see us through the same lifestyle of what we live now. We're very fortunate, I say. We're not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but we can, like, if she wants to go and do something, my daughters, we can go and do it. We live in a nice house. If we want to go on holiday, 9 times out of 10, obviously not at the minute, we can afford to just go on holiday. Like last year when COVID hit, we were in a position that we just went and brought a caravan so we could still take the kids away.
Fantastic. And there's not many people that can do that.
No, and that's something I wouldn't never want to lose again. Like you say, it's what keeps me driving now because I think I wouldn't want to go back to a position like when we was doing that house in Bloxwich and we lost our biggest contract where we had to really tighten up and everything. And like, not that I splashed the cash, but I really like paying attention to the pennies back then. Do you know what I mean? Because I thought if we make one wrong move now, we're either going to end up, because the house at that point was unmortgageable. There was no kitchen. There was no bathroom. I thought if we lose our pot of money now, because we're being daft, we're literally going to lose everything. We could end up being bankrupt here and have no house. Like I'm going to go back to parents. The business could die because there's no funds to keep it going. So we had to really watch it at that point for a couple of years. So it was kind of when we sold the house then and we kind of put a big, I like to have a little bit of a buffer behind me. That's when I probably start getting my most stressy is if I've not got a cash buffer behind me. And I don't want it there for any other reason. I just know worst case scenario, I can live my same life for a year based off what's in my bank. Because if all shit hits the fan, I've got a year to carry on paying the mortgage, carry on paying the cars, the bills and all that stuff and nursery fees, which everyone knows is stupid price, but I wouldn't want to pull my youngest out of nursery because she gets so much from it. It's not even a childcare factor because me and my wife, we're at home, like we can have them, but she goes 2 days a week and what she gets from there in 2 days is far more than what she would get from being with us for another 2 days. She gets 5 days with us then, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's something I would never want to drop off. So I know if I can keep that little nest there in the background, it gives me a year to think of a new business idea and pick something up. I've got my notes on my phone. I must have like 100, 200 business ideas jotted down. And like, I've always got something on the back burner.
And do you feel that it, your mind sort of goes into overdrive at all?
With business?
Yeah. Just sort of thinking new ideas all the time.
Yeah. I think my wife gets fed up with it because we'll literally be somewhere. I can't go into somewhere. I think it's happened more since I've ran my own businesses and obviously start to learn about the marketing and the branding and all that kind of stuff and customer service and the customer journeys. So now I'll go in somewhere and like I'll go into a restaurant and I was like, that wasn't a very good customer journey. They've just took me on. Like they've left me sitting there for this long and then they've not brought the menus over quick enough. And I'm thinking of it rather than just a moaning customer, I'm thinking like, man, if I was the owner, what was that, sorry?
But like in a customer service point of view.
Yeah. And it's like you say, yeah, but with loads of stuff now, I think like, oh, there should be an idea for that. There should be this and there should be that. So I'm constantly thinking of stuff. And as I start to dabble into something new, and I realised my pains when I was trying to get into that industry, I then try and think, like, well, what can I put in place that will help others get into that industry easier than what I had to get into it? So, like, schools, it's super hard to get a school contract. So, like, I always try and think in the background, like, kids need qualified sports coaches. There's not many school, at primary level, there's not many primary teachers that are, A, comfortable to deliver PE because it's not their natural background. Or delivering the content. And PE to me, obviously, is my passion, but PE to me is like as important as maths and English in my eyes. Like I think the social development that you get from being good in PE and the social connections and the way you can talk to people from being in a team, like far outweighs to me learning Sokotoa in maths. Do you know what I mean? Or like Pythagoras. I can't even say the word. Pythagoras.
Yeah, no. And obviously the same with property, I presume.
Yeah, property is just what it was with property is I noticed from doing it, but from falling into it, I noticed how much cash it could bring in. Because we did, like you say, we did a couple on the back burner and we made more from those couple of deals that we did on weekends than I did running a business for a year. Wow. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like I noticed the level of money that property could bring in, and it's a safe bet as well. Like, yes, there's going to be dips in the market, but if you're in a position where you can withhold it and rent it out, and you're getting your more, for me, from just getting the on any rental properties we've got, like during at the minute, or like in any dips or recessions, if I can cover the bills for those periods, like no problem, because it will pick back up and you'll have many, many years of profit again. And then it will dip again. As long as you can just cover at that point and make minimal losses, it'll pick back up again. So it's definitely something that we're pushing more towards now. And we've took on our biggest project in 2017, really pushed us to the limits, and we're coming out the back end now and we've really enjoyed it. So that's why we're now like, we've got the business set up. We're looking for investment. We want to find deals. We want to work with people and recreate what we've created here with others on board, because it's such a good journey to go on.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, something I really want to talk about is your podcast, which you've recently started.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit more about that.
So that came about, I was trying to get more of a, I was never one for social media. Not that I was against it. I was on social media. I had Facebook, I had Instagram, and I just kind of watched others on it. I was just one of those guys just in the background. And then obviously like went on a bit of a journey last year and the year before that with a business coach who kind of took me down like positive mental attitude and like the power of thinking you want it and you'll get it and all that kind of stuff, which was stuff before I never believed in. And obviously putting yourself out there a lot more, and more will come to you if you're out there. And I completely understand it now, like what I get off social media from what I got before is like second to none. But yeah, basically started putting my journey out there and started just documenting it for no other reason than, I don't know, what was the real reason I started documenting my journey, really? It was probably my business coach just saying, look, you need to get yourself out there. Like, the more I told people my story, they were like, you've been on such a journey, you're so young. Like, you should put it out there because there'll be others that will gain inspiration from what you've done. But I never looked at myself like that. I just didn't look at myself in that way at all. I didn't think that people would look at me and be like, oh, I want what he's got. I just thought, well, I'm just working hard and doing what I've got to do to just look after me and my family.
You are such an inspiration, trust me. you inspire me, and trust me, you've inspired so many others. Why did you not think you would be inspiring any other people, anyone else?
I don't know. Maybe it was because I don't know the answer. I just didn't look at myself in that way. I never have. I was never the go-to person at school. You know, you got your cool kids at school. I was never that. I was never the go-to person. I'm not saying that that's what the inspirational people are, but at that moment in time, that's what I thought they was. Do you know what I mean? It's only now, the more I look into it and the more I research and follow people and watch people, that I realise anybody can be an inspiration.
Your mindset, your journey is absolutely fantastic, and anyone, whatever it may be, but your capability and your ability to sort of shift from one place to another and shift your mindset and change people's mindset as well and change their ability to shift. But look at what you've created in such a short space of time. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
And look at your children, look at the way they look up to you.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing now is, like I say, like, My eldest daughter, I want to be a builder. Like, she'll go into school and it makes me really proud. She'll go into the school and I can hear her saying to her friends, my daddy's a PE teacher, he's a builder, and he speaks to people on the cameras.
What is This Dad Means Business?
So This Dad Means Business, yeah, I went off a bit then. So yeah, it kind of come about. So when I started putting myself on social media, because my business coach, again, listened to my story and suggested it, I started just documenting what I was doing. And like I said, to my surprise, I had quite a few messages off people, like old school friends, just random people on Instagram, mainly on Instagram. And they would just say like, how, a lot of them were school friends. They'd say, how are you running a business, building a house? Cause that's what we've done in the last 2 years, building your own house and being there with the girls like day in, day out, because I would do bath time, I would take them to school. Like I taught myself on YouTube how to French plait hair so that my daughter could go to school with the best hair in class. Like, and that was the kind of stuff I was putting on social media. And I thought, when I probably got to about the 10th message of somebody saying, like, how are you juggling it all? How are you doing it? I thought, it's not just me. Like, there are millions of other dads out there that are doing what I'm doing, that are running businesses or working really high-end jobs, that are really, really good family men as well. And I thought, if I can just put, like, create a community and pull people together, not only will it hopefully inspire maybe men in business that are debating becoming dads because they don't know if they can juggle it and they're doubting themselves to do it, because the greatest thing that I've ever done is have a family. Like, it far outweighs anything. So I would highly recommend it to anybody. And like, some of my friends now saying, like, it's just not for me. I'd rather just do this, and that's fine. I was similar at the start, but I do say to them, honestly, you will never experience anything in life like having your own kids. Like, it far outweighs anything. Any achievement you've ever had will be smashed and obliterated when you see your kids for the first time and watch them grow and get older. So yeah, it kind of stemmed from that. So I started putting together some dads that I knew that were really good dads that ran businesses themselves, and just put the question to them, like, how are you doing it? Like, I've got my way, you've got your way. And if somebody can listen to it and pull little nuggets from it, yeah, and it stemmed from that. So I got a little bit of a Facebook community now where dads can support dads. And the more I did it, the more dads have started contacting me now and saying, like, oh, I really appreciate what you've done, because there isn't much out there for men, in particular, in for dads. Like, dads don't talk to each other about stuff like that. They still don't. You go to the pub and you might briefly touch up on something, but then it quickly goes back to football or, I don't know, something that's happening in the market or business. Don't really talk about your parenting issues as such, and dads have them the same as mums do, but mums have got really, they do it right. Mums have got really good networks within each other. They've got WhatsApp groups galore, like, oh man, my daughter's just done this.
They've got so many different networking platforms. Yeah. But it's important to not dismiss that. Obviously, mums are welcome as well. But like you said as well, the dads don't, well, men in general, even in business, they've got this barrier that I think we all need to just put it down and talk.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's up, but you've created such a great platform. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's literally, like I say, what you've just said. Like I say, the more people I talk to, I just think they're so guarded for no reason other than, for me, other than pride. And I think it's actually more proud to talk to somebody and say, look, I had this issue last week. I couldn't do X, Y, Z, whatever it is. I'm trying to think of an example. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But yeah, I can't do X, Y, Z. How have you done it in the past? Do you know what I mean? And I was never this guy before kids. I was never this guy probably up until my second came along. But now I will happily pick up the phone to somebody that I know has been through a certain situation. Like, I did it 2 weeks ago. I rang a pal, somebody that I go motorbike riding with. He runs a huge business and he's a great dad. Won't come on the podcast because it's not his scene. He's too within himself, which is a real shame because he would have been a good one. But yeah, I rang him and I was like, look, mate, I need to come chat to you. Like, that was the end of that. And he, no hesitation, he was like, yeah, no problem, come over. And the weight that was lifted off to my shoulders after that chat, I was with him for about an hour and he just put things straight into perspective there and then. I was like, right, that was what I needed, done and dusted. Do you know what I mean? But he's like, you say, if in a month it happens again, I'll contact him again, or I'll contact somebody different that I know has been for that situation. But there are loads and loads of men that are having those thoughts. And it probably was just because of COVID and everything's going on. My business has been so affected by it. I can see that my eldest in particular, my eldest daughter is not getting affected by it, but missing her pals and just missing general routine and not being her normal self. She's quite emotional when normally she's so happy and not bothered by things. So I think it was all just getting a bit much. But yeah, there'd be loads of men in that situation that would keep that bottled up and try and figure a route out by themselves for some reason. And sometimes all it takes is just to go and chat to somebody that might not have even been through it, but just letting them know what you're feeling. And they could say just one tiny little thing and you go, oh, that was it.
So what would you sort of say to any dad out there? Do you have any tips, tricks to sort of help anyone, that you would advise anyone to?
I think the main thing for me that's helped me is obviously enjoying what you're doing, because there's nothing worse than waking up of a morning and feeling that dread about what you're about to go and do, whether it's your job or even whether it's your business. A lot of people might go into business because they think it's what they want to do, and it really ain't. It doesn't turn out what it's meant to be. Yeah. And that's fine. You don't need to feel like you're a failure. Like, I know many people that have set up businesses and left that and gone back into jobs because they work better off that routine. And when you work for yourself and you have your own business, it's up to you to create that routine and that strategy and those plans in place. And that's what a lot of people struggle with. And I get that. I did for a bit. But yeah, my main thing would be do what you enjoy, because if you're waking up already in the mindset of, oh, God, and then we all know kids can be hard, and then the kids are having a slightly tricky day, or they wake you up at night time, you're just going to snap. You're just going to then be on their backs. And it's not their fault. They didn't ask you to bring them into this world. Do you know what I mean? You and your wife or you and your partner chose to make the decision to bring a kid into this world. The least you can do is give them the best chance. Do you know what I mean? So I just think, if you're going to give them the best chance, you need to give yourself the best chance, which is put yourself in the best position, circle yourself around the best people you possibly can. And if all those things are aligning and they're all setting themselves up, then all you're doing is giving yourself the best opportunity. That's all you can do. You can't be too hard on yourself either. You will have shit days and your kids will test you. But that's just part and parcel. As long as the good outweighs the bad, and you accept that when it is really dark and maybe it is a really dim time and things are really hard, you accept that it's only going to get better, then that's all it can do in my eyes. Like I say, I'm very fortunate with the circle of people I've got around me. I've got a really supporting immediate family. And over the past year, I've positioned myself into a really good circle of friends. And what I look for, I don't go searching for friends. You know what I mean? You bump into people and you meet people. But I connect with people now on a far deeper level that are good family people. That's my number one value, my number one moral, is if they're into their family, then they are going to value me turning down going to the pub with them because I'm going out with my kids instead. Do you know what I mean? Rather than maybe my old set of friends from school life that haven't got kids yet, that if they go, oh, I'm going to the pub, are you coming? No, I'm going to read a story to my kid instead. Oh, what are you doing, man? Just come to the pub instead. Oh, I don't need that anymore. I'm all about my family now, so.
So how do you sort of ensure that you get the work-life balance right, and obviously with your wife and your kids?
Yeah, it is hard, and I think it's not something that you can click into place straight away. It's something that takes time, and it takes a lot of communication between you and your partner to get sorted. It normally takes, in my eyes, it takes for one or the other to go, right, we need to just do this or this. This is what's worked for me anyway. Like, I like to get my fitness in. I like to get my time in. And I didn't want to do that and jeopardize time with my wife or with my family or make my wife's life any harder. So I chose to become an early bird. So, like, now I'm up at 4:30 in the morning and I'll go for most mornings a 10-kilometer walk in the morning. And I'm back by 6:30, 6:45, when the kids are rising. And I like to get back before the kids are awake. So then I'm done and dusted. I've got my time. I've like listened to my podcast, or I've been out with one of my friends that I go walking with. And I've kind of set my day up then already. I like to get back, sort the kids out, and let my wife sleep in. Like, she gets so much satisfaction out of being able to just, even if she doesn't wake up late and she gets up at, say, 7, just being able to stay in bed for another hour, 30 minutes, and just come around in her own time, that's what she enjoys. I'm not a fan of that. It doesn't bother me. That's what she enjoys. So if I can do something, can sort my routine out that gives her a better start to her day, then already the kids are going to have a better day because we're already in good mindsets then. So I think, yeah, going back to your question, just sorting it out. And it will take maybe 3 or 4 attempts. Like, this is probably the best routine we've been in now. And it took for me to be getting up at 4:30 to sort that. I always wanted to be an early bird. I could never do it. I was like, 8 o'clock, I would be getting up. I always wanted to be somebody that was up and out, and I was thought, oh man, they're already ahead of me. I used to wake up at 8 o'clock and think, man, some people have been out. I've seen it on Instagram. They've been out since 5 doing their business. They're already 3 hours ahead of me in the day. So yeah, sorting that out would be the number one thing, is just sorting something that works for you and your partner. It's no good finding something that works just for you, but it's putting immense pressure on your partner because they've got to be left with all the other duties, or they don't get to do something they enjoy. That's not fair. So that would be my number one thing. Second thing for me, what I like to do is have a set amount of things that I really, really enjoy to do in the week with the kids and with the family. So I really enjoy, it sounds silly, I really enjoy blow drying my daughter's hairs.
that doesn't sound silly.
Yeah, like to people that aren't parents, they're probably like, what is he on about? But I'd like, literally, I've been working upstairs before, and my kids have got out of the bath, and I've heard my wife turn the hairdryer on. I've downed tools. I've ran downstairs, and I've gone, no, this is my job. Like, I'm the person that does the blow drying in this house. And I just love sitting there and just staring at the back of the head while I'm just brushing the hair with a hairdryer. So that is something I will always try and do twice a week, like typically on a Sunday and a Wednesday when the hair gets done. That gets me that time. I like to do school runs as much as I can. I'll always set myself a target, so I'll do at least 2 a week. Any more than that is a bonus. But obviously, I understand I still need to get into work. I still need to do stuff on the house. I need to meet people. I need to get out there. That's fine. But 2 days a week, for sure, I'm out of action until 9:30 because I want to do all the stuff in the morning. I want to get them ready. I want to do the bath. I want to do the hair. I want to take them to school. Again, 2 times a week, I want to pick them up. I want them to come out of the school doors and see me there instead of the mum. And like you say, on the flip side of that, it allows my wife time to do her own things then. Like, she's got into fitness this year, so she's now finding time to go walking and to go training in the living room, and or it would have been the gym normally, but it allows her time that now, because she knows so many times a week I am the person doing that. And we don't set strict days. That's one thing we don't do. We don't say like, oh, Monday, Tuesday is Jack day and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is Jamie day. We don't do that. If I'm back and I'm from a walk and I've got nothing diaried in, I'll go, look, I'll take the kids today. You can have your time.
So it's very relaxed.
It is. It's a relaxed routine, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And It's not necessarily structured, but it works for you. And I think that's very important for people to realize that the more pressure you put on yourself, ultimately, it's going to, I mean, I'm saying this from my, bad. The more pressure you put on yourself and that you put on your wife, ultimately it sort of runs down to your kids and they pick up on it. They pick up on it a lot because they are sponges. Your kids are sponges. They pick up on everything. I mean, I don't know what you're...
They pick up on everything. And that's the thing. I didn't want another thing, like when we was having kids, I didn't want them to see that just mom was cooking dinners. So I cook dinners most of the nights. And that's not because my wife doesn't want to. Like, most of the time, I'll start cooking. She's like, no, I'll do it tonight. You did it last night. We don't have, like you say, a strict routine for that. Like, I am, like, the dishwasher guy. That wasn't something that was agreed. I would be the dishwasher guy. But I'm just the one that loads the dishwashers and loads it. She does the washing. It's just something. And it's really important, like you say, going back to your initial question as how I juggle my life, is the first and foremost is to get that understanding with your partner. And to not make them feel like they have to do everything because you're the one out working and you're the dad and you're the man. That's like, that's so like 80s and 70s. Now it's gone.
Victorian, very Victorian, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's done and dusted now, that day and age. Like, I want my kids to see that I am the one cleaning the house. I want them to, and I think it mainly because I want them to find a man like me. Do you know what I mean? I don't want them to find a man that is making them do the cooking and the cleaning. I don't want that for my daughters. I want them to be able to live their life and not feel like they have to get home for a certain time to make sure there's a dinner on the table for the man. Like, I don't want that for them at all. So if they see me doing that to their mum, then that's setting in their head that that's what a man is.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, just going to briefly touch on your mindset, because I think it's fantastic, if I'm totally honest with you, because you've completely shifted it from the beginning. So do you try and actively promote a positive mindset, and how do you stay positive within your mindset?
I do now. I never did. I never used to. I never even understood it. I never even heard of it, if I'm honest. I never knew it was a thing. Very fortunate that none of my immediate family have ever suffered with any kind of mental health or anything like that. So it's not something, not to my knowledge anyway. The first kind of example of mental health awareness was with my wife, like I say, when we went traveling. She'd had some sort of kind of anxiety and things like that. So I understood the importance of it then, and that it was actually a thing, and that you need to look after your brain like you do your body. But it's only been the last probably 18 months that it's something that I've actively kind of looked after. So I knew, I understood that training in the gym made me switch off. And I do get now that it's important for my brain to switch off and just kind of have, even if it's just an hour a day, of not thinking about the next business or not thinking about financial issues in my current business, or thinking that the kitchen needs to get delivered, I need to go and get a project manager for that job and this and that. I get that now because I do feel so much better for it. So as I mentioned, those early morning walks are what works for me. And it won't work for everybody. Some people, it probably make them ill trying to get up early. If that's not them, then that's not them. But yeah, for me, I found that those morning walks really set me up really well for the day. I feel so much better. And by 7 o'clock, to look at my phone and think, oh man, I've done my 10,000 step goal. I feel good for it. I've been out in the fresh air for 2 hours. Like I'm ahead of the game now. I can really get into the day. Really, really small things are what keep me going, like having a cup of tea with my wife of an evening.
I think that's so important what you just said as well. Like getting up early, and that might not be you. You might just want to sort of lay in bed till 10 in the morning, which is absolutely fine. I mean, you might be going to bed at 12 at night, which is fine as well. And you want to bed at 10 in the morning and chill out. That might be your personal
When you watch people online, on social media, and these influencers, they live a lifestyle and they make you think that you need to live that lifestyle. And I mean, people even sell packages on it now, like, oh, if you want success like me, follow my routine. But it doesn't work for everybody. I think the best thing that I could advise on that is I've read loads of books over the last 2 years. I've watched loads of webinars, watched loads of YouTube videos on like self-help and all this stuff. And I try and take just like one little strain out of everyone and think, how can I put what they're doing into my life? Does it even fit into my life? Because if it doesn't, then they're irrelevant to me. Your life isn't set up to everyone else's. So if your routine is different, what Tony Robbins is doing in Miami on his trampoline at 5 o'clock in the morning isn't going to help you in Warsaw at 10 o'clock at night. Do you know what I mean?
It's what you just said there. I think that will help a lot of people because not everyone has to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go, oh, I'm ahead of the game. I've got 3 hours ahead of everyone, because everyone wants to get up at five. No, they don't. No. You don't have to get up at five, go out for a run, go to the gym. You don't have to do that. You can go to bed at 12 o'clock at night and get up at 10.
Yeah.
As long as you get your stuff done, whatever that may be, it's still fine. Be yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I'll get the message across. As long as you are you and you can still get your stuff done in a productive way.
Yeah, that's 100% the main thing. Like I say, it's just know what you need to get done in your whatever's going to propel you forward, whatever's going to move you forward. And like I say, if you can just, somebody said this to me on my podcast a couple of weeks, so it sounds like I'm using his phrase, but it was something I've always thought. Obviously, you can just be a little bit better. I don't even look at the next day. He looks at the next day. I look at the next week. If you can have a better week next week than what your week was before, then you're always moving in the next direction. And I don't look at it daily because I do think that puts quite a lot of pressure on to make you think like, oh, well, yesterday I had a really good day. How can I make it even better tomorrow? Like, how many books can I read this week to make myself better? And it's not about that. It's just if you can keep moving in the same direction, in the right direction, and do something a little bit better. And that might be like an extra donation to charity the next week, or it might be just doing something that puts you in a better mindset to move yourself forward. And if you can just do that week, a month, a year, before you know it, you'll look back, like you're saying, you'll think 3 years down the line, small habits that you started doing 3 years ago that weren't making an iota of difference at the time have now all of a sudden put you in this position. It's only when you realize that then. Like I look back now and I think like 18 months ago, I started paying attention to people online, started reading books, started putting myself out there more. And for the first year, I didn't get nothing from it. And now all of a sudden, like these last 6 months, it's like everything's starting to click into position and I'm in a really good morning routine and I feel good and I'm learning loads and I'm meeting loads of great people and I've got a good circle of friends around me. That all started from 2 years ago, just really small little changes that I probably didn't even realise I was doing. It was just stuff I'd read and thought, oh, I'll try that. And then you try it for a couple of weeks and you stop doing it because it don't work. But subliminally, you're still doing tiny little bits of it because you know it good does work, but you ain't got the time for it at that moment in time. Or it could be whatever excuse you've got at that moment in time. It's a valid excuse, I'm sure, but subliminally, you know it works and you'll keep doing just a little bit of it until eventually it becomes a proper routine and a proper habit.
And I think it's important to realise that it takes time. It's not going to happen. Yeah. It does take time and you've got to be persistent. Yeah. Just keep going and just know that it will get better. It will get easier. Like you mentioned, the gym, you like to train.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen overnight. You're not going to become this Greek god overnight. You train, not necessarily to get to be the next bodybuilder, the next Dorian Yates or the next Ronnie Coleman out there.
Yeah.
But you train, obviously, to stimulate your mind. So you know it's going to help you for that hour or 2 hours that you're in there.
So that's exactly that, isn't it? Like I say, and it works in all walks of life. Like I say, my training in the gym, I didn't want to go in there and get bigger. I didn't want to go in there and lose weight. I wanted to go in there because I knew it made me feel good. And a side factor of that is that I am losing weight and that I am putting on more muscle mass and I do feel better for it. That's great. Do you know what I mean? My initial goal wasn't to go in there and become a triangle body shape. That wasn't what I was looking for. It was a fact of the matter is it got me out of bed in the morning, which I knew I wanted to do, and I felt good afterwards. It's the same with work now. Maybe when I first started, my end goal was money, whereas now it's especially like with the things like the podcast and the property and now with the schools as well, rather than like, oh, if I can get that contract, oh, I'll have this much money, or if I can get that, house, I'll earn this much. It's more now like the podcast is the main one. Is it's helping people. And then like, that's my passion. And then like a side effect of that is I'm being connected with great people that I could do business with. And then it's just like, that all stems from my initial goal was, if I could just put a podcast out there that helps 10 people, I'm happy with that.
If you had one question that you could ask Jack, what would you sort of say to him?
Trust yourself, I think would probably be the biggest thing, because obviously it's a natural thing, isn't it? Everyone has a bit of self-doubt. And then people doubt you as well. And it's not that people doubt you, maybe like your family, the family have got your best interests at heart, which is probably the safer route. Like they would rather you take the safer route because they know that you're supported and you're covered and financially you're okay. But yeah, I think it would just be trust yourself. Like, don't worry about, like, I'm very much in a mindset now of don't worry about it. Like there could be 1,001 really big issues going on. I can deal with it as they hit me. I try not to lie in bed at night and worry about all of the issues at once, because that's not going to help anybody. Everybody's got issues going on. If you can just kind of get yourself to deal with them as they approach you and be proactive in dealing with them, then yeah. But my advice to myself at that age would definitely be trust yourself.
Honestly, it's been absolutely fantastic. I've really, really enjoyed having you on the show.
My pleasure.
Where can people come and find you? Where can they come and connect with yourself?
Yeah, so I'm most active on social on Instagram, which is Jack M. Craven. My podcast is called This Dad Means Business, which is on iTunes and Spotify. But yeah, they're the main two. Just searching for me on Facebook, Instagram. Like I say, I've not got a big following, so anybody that messages me, it doesn't get caught up in a load of messages. They come straight to me. I'll respond to everybody. So if anybody does have any questions or anything they'd like to say or anything like that, I'm always open. Like I say, I want to help as many people as I can. So yeah, feel free to send me a message and connect with me and we can take it from there.
Jack, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show and I hope we can get you
no
back
problem.
Once you've done, you've finished your current project.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.